The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPont.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. There's a lot of confusion all over Texas when it comes to CBD oil, with vendors and customers operating in gray areas buying and selling the hemp extract. Monday night, without fanfare, Governor Greg Abbott signed HB 1325 into law. This could clear up a lot of that confusion. It legalizes hemp farming and the sale and possession of hemp derivative CBD oil containing less than 0.3% of THC. That's the compound that produces a high in marijuana. That new state law goes into effect immediately. Still, there are a lot of questions about CBD oil. I spoke with State Representative Stephanie Click, a Republican from Fort Worth. She filed the bill that was passed in the legislature, 3703, that expands the list of qualifying conditions that physicians can use to prescribe medical cannabis.
There are some new conditions that were added, and that is based on some of the new research that's been done regarding the efficacy of CBD for those conditions. MS is one of the conditions. Spasticity is another condition. A lot of folks with MS have spasticity, but not everyone with spasticity has MS. And there's good research for that condition. It also includes some incurable neurodegenerative disorders like ALS. Terminal cancer patients were also included, as were those with autism.
So we had passed a highly restrictive Compassionate Use Act in 2015, and now we have this amendment to it, expansion that you passed. Why did you think it was important that we made these changes?
Mostly because we have data to support making those changes, that this is something that would benefit patients. We have some research to support that. And, you know, from day one, I've wanted to take a science-based approach to this.
You're a registered nurse?
That is correct. I am.
So you've seen firsthand how these products can make a difference for people who are in need.
Especially for those with seizure disorders. Some of the patients that I've become acquainted with in the last 5 years working this issue have become seizure-free. And when you go from having 60 or even 100 seizures a day and go months without a seizure, that's life-changing.
As you said, research helped drive the expansion of compassionate use. More research is being made available all the time, and people are talking about how this is can be used for things like post-traumatic stress disorder and other issues. Do you think that we'll be looking at those issues down the road?
Possibly, if there is data to support that. I know that there is currently a study that is underway for PTSD. The results of that have not yet been published, so I'm anxious to review that when that becomes available.
There's concerns by some people and many people who are in your party in power in Texas. First of all, they don't believe that medical marijuana, there's a role for it. And they worry that this is actually opening a door for recreational marijuana use.
I would disagree with that. We are still talking low THC CBD products, products that do not have the psychoactive amount of THC that people would want to abuse.
Now, CBD oil seems to be having its day right now. A lot of people are talking about its benefits, and it's becoming available, widely available, even at everyday stores. I guess you've noticed that, right?
I have noticed that, and I would say buyer beware. when you purchase those products, you do not know whether what is contained in the bottle is what it says on the label. These are not produced in a regulated environment. Some of the products that have been tested around the state contain nothing but olive oil.
And there have been some that actually contained dangerous synthetic drugs.
You're exactly right. In Utah, the product contained rat poison. In Georgia, it contained Viagra. And in Houston, it contained K2, which is an illegal synthetic form of cannabis.
Buyer beware is one thing. Are these things illegal? Are they breaking the law? Should there be some sort of enforcement?
Currently, those products are not legal in Texas. I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, but we do not yet participate in the Farm Bill at the federal level. We did pass hemp legislation during the session, and it will take a while before that goes into place and that program is set up. So, you know, there are a lot of folks that have jumped the gun and are marketing products that are not legal yet.
What would you like to see happening right now in Texas? Do you want law enforcement to shut down these CBD oil sales?
What I would like to see happen is that products that are adulterated, meaning that they might contain harmful substances, are not on the shelves.
And how does that happen? How do you enforce that?
Well, right now, that would be a complaint-driven process where someone would file a complaint that they have been harmed by the products and, you know, file a complaint and it would be investigated.
As a medical professional, you're well acquainted with the placebo effect. Do you think a lot of people are taking what they think is CBD oil and enjoying this placebo effect?
I think that that's certainly possible.
It's a powerful psychological impact that it has on people's health.
I mean, that's true with many substances, that if there's the perception that they will be beneficial, that there's a placebo effect. That's true of any substance.
Do you have any plans for the next legislative session? Where do you think that compassionate use ought to be headed?
What I will probably do going forward is, monitor the expansion efforts, the rulemaking process, and, you know, making sure that the program expansion is up and functional and operational, and seeing if there are different things that we might need to do to make it a better program.
Do you think we need to have opportunities to hear from the public and have them weigh in? And if things go awry, we're able to hear those complaints?
Absolutely. And, you know, there is public input in the rulemaking process, just as there is in the legislative process.
State Representative Stephanie Click, a Republican from Fort Worth, passed the bill that expanded the Texas Compassionate Use Program. Do you use CBD oil? What does it do for you? Do you trust what the label says? Do you think Texas should go ahead and expand compassionate use to even more, maybe even full-blown medical marijuana? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the expansion of use of CBD oil in the last legislative session. Bills were signed, 3703, specifically House Bill 3703, created an expansion of compassionate use in Texas, expanding the ways that doctors can prescribe CBD oil, medical marijuana, for different conditions in Texas. But this is a specific type of medical marijuana, very low THC. That is the psychoactive substance that is a part of, you know, when you buy
marijuana that most people will typically think of. What people are looking for is the CBD oil, which is the another component of the product, which is also available in hemp. And that is being being talked about as a way to deal with all sorts of issues, including chronic pain, anxiety, sleeplessness, inflammation, chronic inflammation all throughout the body. People are using this for all sorts of substances. But the question is this legal? There's still some issues with it on the federal level, but still state by state, it's becoming legal along the way. Now, I understand that Ryan Poppy, a Texas Public Radio reporter, has been covering the story. And Ryan, are you on the line?
I am. Thanks for having me, Dave.
So, Ryan, what did we end up with in this last legislative session?
Okay, so we started out with 63 bills, right? Just throwing marijuana reform legislation anywhere that they, that advocates could. And we got down to two bills in the end. And one of those you mentioned, HB 3703, the other one being HB 1325, which sets up our own state program for regulating hemp grows as well as hemp-derived CBD production.
Let me ask you, why do we need to legalize hemp production in Texas?
Well, so in 2018, as part of that farm bill, as Representative Plick alluded to, I'll take issue with some of the things she said here in a second, but part of that legalized the agricultural growth of industrial hemp, allowing farmers to grow hemp as an agricultural commodity. And it also, part of that, declassified CBD. This may be strange to learn, as you see the CBD stores all around the Bexar County area, but CBD was once classified as a Schedule I narcotic, the same classification as heroin and LSD. So bringing that classification down allowed CBD to be sold as a hemp-derived form if it would contain below 0.3% THC. That's that psychoactive element of the marijuana plant.
Well, as I understand it, that the DEA still considers CBD to be a highly controlled substance. They just decided they're not going to enforce it. But that varies. I mean, there are questions about what happens to you if you bring this through the airport. There was an elderly woman in the airport in DFW who was arrested in May, right?
Right. And that's also like if you're traveling with it and you don't know the level of THC that may be contained in that CBD oil that maybe you purchased from Colorado or maybe you purchased from Washington, it can actually be federally illegal if it's above that 0.3% level. And the other thing is in that case, I believe it started out with a TSA agent at DFW sort of cracking down. And that's the other element of it, too, is law enforcement not necessarily having a full grasp of what this all is yet. There was another case, I believe, in Duncanville, still in North Texas, where a CBD shop was raided because there was complaints that it smelled like marijuana. Hemp, this industrial hemp, does smell like marijuana.
Let me go to Alex Samuels, reporter for the Texas Tribune. Did you hear the interview with Representative Click? She sounded very guarded, and she was not very gabby about this. And I wonder if this is there's still some hesitance in talking about this, particularly with people in the Republican Party.
With hemp specifically?
Hemp or with compassionate use or medical marijuana, CBD oil, all of these things.
Yeah, I think specifically, I mean, we saw bipartisan support. I think the hemp bill passed both the House and Senate unanimously. There was pretty little debate on there. But with the Compassionate Use Act, I feel like there's this fear, I'd say primarily amongst Republicans, that this would maybe open the door to recreational marijuana somewhere down the line. I know when State Senator Donna Campbell was introducing Representative Click's compassionate use bill on the Senate floor, she got some pushback from Republicans along that. I think the fear is that in future legislative sessions, we're going to keep opening the door to the Compassionate Use Act, whether that's raising the cap on the amount of THC that lawmakers allow, or expanding the number of conditions and kind of what that means for the state as we keep inching forward.
And Dr. Karen Keough, the Chief Medical Officer for Compassionate Cultivation, welcome to The Source. What's your reaction to what came out of the legislative session on this issue?
Well, we were all very pleased to see the expansion to include different conditions for compassionate use and medical guidance for utilization of CBD therapy. We know that this is a really important treatment. The first steps in the epilepsy world were very successful. We had a lot of patients who had great success with this treatment, and it proved to be very easy to roll it out in a carefully supervised way. We've had increasing engagement from physicians. So I think that we are really looking forward to giving more access to this important treatment in different kinds of medical conditions.
But still, it's I would imagine that right now we're in a condition where the CBD dropper, eyedropper, is either half full or half empty because there was so much more that people were looking for.
I think there were a lot of other conditions on the table that we had hoped would be part of the expansion, but it's going to be a stepwise process. There are a lot of different aspects here that play into it, and some of it is due to concerns about recreational use. Some of it is due to concerns about the evidence base for medical utilization that is still in development for a lot of different conditions. So there are lots of different factors that affect those step-by-step advances. I think that as we are able to get more experience with these different conditions, and we have more and more physician providers who are willing to step out and learn about how to utilize this treatment, then the medical community will get more comfortable with it in parallel with the opening of minds on a political level.
All right. So you're saying let's take our time and take this step by step, whereas other states around the country are they're going full gallop.
You know, every state has a different approach to it. There are certainly other states that have listed conditions with exclusion of other conditions. There are many states where CBD is allowed as a treatment and not full-scale medical marijuana. It's really all over the board. One of the things that I really appreciate about the way that the Texas program has been implemented is the requirement for involvement of a prescribing physician, because I think that is a key differentiator. In other states, it really is kind of made available and patients will go out and they have access to this treatment, but they don't really know how to integrate it into their medical management. And that can become very complex because many of these patients have lots of other things going on beyond the single condition or symptomatology that might drive them to explore CBD. And this medication does have interactions with other drugs. It has other kinds of side effects that have medical implications. So having the medical profession be a part of that treatment plan, I think, is essential. And Texas, as far as I know, is the only state that has required physician participation.
So it sounds like you're saying you're warning people against self-prescribing.
I think in order to get the best possible results, physician guidance is essential. When people are using CBD kind of for a wellness supplement at very low dosing, that's a different kind of a gamble because the dosing has much less of a possibility for drug interactions and adverse side effects. But if you're talking about pharmacological dosing, that's where it gets more complicated. On the other hand, when people aren't using adequate doses to really treat more complicated medical conditions like epilepsy or other sorts of things, Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, spasticity, self-treatment is likely to be met with frustration because it's not being done appropriately.
That's because the products you will buy off the shelf have such tiny amounts of CBD active components?
They do have tiny amounts, generally speaking. The bigger problem, as Representative Click mentioned, is that there's really no quality control. There's a lot of variability from product to product, and there's no assurance that the content of those medicine bottles is as the label says that it is. The label is often not very straightforward. It will talk about milligrams of hemp oil, which doesn't really tell you what the CBD concentration is. You don't know what the THC concentration is. You don't know what the contaminants are. So it's very risky to be utilizing these commercial-grade CBD preparations as a medical therapy.
Let me go to the phones. This is Jennifer. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm Jennifer Cantu, resident here in San Antonio, and just wanted to share that I have a sister, Julie, who has uncontrollable seizures. She's had been on 7 different FDA-approved drugs, and because of the 2015 Compassionate Care Act, she was able to go on the CBD oil with THC. Her seizures went from 92 a month to down to 2 seizures. It has been life-changing for our family. And for her as well. So just wanted to comment and say how critical this work is, that it really is changing lives, changing families. And I would love to see it expanded. Excited about the 2019 bill that was just passed and signed by the governor, but would love to see it expanded to include PTSD and also to see the THC increased to be at a higher amount, similar to other states that have passed compassionate care and or medical marijuana bills. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for your call, Jennifer. And so, Dr. Keough, what about the issue of having, she brings up very low THC levels in Texas CBD oil. Is that a factor?
It's definitely a factor. One of the challenges with THC content is that there's even less evidence to guide us in how to utilize THC as part of the treatment. It definitely seems to be very important for some particular patients and in some certain conditions, but it's been much more difficult to study THC treatment in a rigorous way because of the nature of THC as a Schedule I controlled substance, and there are a lot of restrictions on performing medical research in THC-containing compounds. So the best data that we have are really from CBD trials, and in the world of epilepsy, there were a lot of wide-scale trials for CBD with zero THC. So we have a lot less information to give good medical guidance utilizing THC as part of the therapy. It's easy to say, okay, well, more THC would be better. The problem is that more THC definitely at some point has both short-term and long-term negative attributes for side effect profile and long-term impact, especially in a developing brain. And we don't understand it quite well enough to really know where we draw the line into potential longer-term consequences. So I think from a safety standpoint, keeping the THC levels at the lower end is important, and keeping physicians involved in how to start to implement THC as part of the treatment is very important.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about medical marijuana, CBD oil here in Texas, a hot topic in the last legislative session. Governor Greg Abbott signed a bill for these on Monday, and they went into effect immediately. But so what has changed on the ground level? We'll talk to our panel of reporters and an expert when we come back from the break. Your questions are welcome, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this quick break.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a new day in Texas when it comes to medical marijuana and CBD oil. But what does that day look like? What changed? New bills were passed in the legislative session, effective immediately after the signing by Governor Greg Abbott. So what did we get? Alex Samuels is a reporter for the Texas Tribune. So in regards to medical marijuana, what do we have in Texas?
So right now, the big bill that passed the legislature last month was a bill that expanded the list of conditions that qualify for medical cannabis oil. And currently it had currently only applied to Texans with intractable epilepsy who met a certain list of conditions. They had to meet with two doctors who were licensed with the state. And there was a cap on how much THC that oil can then contain.
Right. But so let me pause you right there because I'm really confused. And I really want to try and clear up this. So when you're talking still about like a medical oil, right?
Yes.
So as far as medical marijuana goes, there's still no like medically prescribed joints in Texas, right?
No, not to my knowledge.
So that doesn't exist in Texas.
Again, not to my knowledge. Yeah.
All right. And you concur, Ryan Poppy, reporter for Texas Public Radio. You've been on this story quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way it goes. So we're still just talking about medical marijuana oil. That's part of the compassionate use, and that's different than CBD oil, Ryan?
Yes. Medical marijuana oil would contain a higher level of THC in medical states, right? A lot of times you'll see that they have a higher level, like somewhere around maybe 5%, 3 to 5%, to increase the absorption of CBD. They call it the entourage effect. Think of when you're taking a vitamin, like vitamin D, you may want to take that with a little magnesium to increase the absorption rate of your calcium, right? It's kind of a lock and key sort of thing. And so that's why you see that in other medical states, is they turn to the Israeli research that has been conducted, and they say, well, at higher rates, you get a higher absorption rate of CBD.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Lorena, welcome to The Source. Lorena, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to share, I've been on CBD oil, not the medical CBD oil, for about 11 months, and it allowed me to completely stop fentanyl patches that I've been on for probably 10-plus years for chronic back pain.
Where do you obtain your CBD oil?
I obtain it on the internet because the company that I use has verifiable third-party testing, so I know it has the actual quantity of CBD oil and it doesn't have any heavy metals or pesticides or anything of that nature in it.
So, I mean, you were using fentanyl patches, and that is, you know, an opioid substance that, and you were easy, were you, is it easy for you to transition to the CBD oil?
It was, you know, I slowly decreased the amount of fentanyl, but, you know, this was something I thought I would be on for the rest of my life. So I was very thankful to be able to stop it.
So do you feel like more people should try it, or did a doctor recommend this? How did you go about this switchover?
Yeah, my pain doctor did recommend it. And, you know, I do think it would be very beneficial for patients in chronic pain, as well as people who are suffering from opiate addiction.
Do you feel like you're breaking the law?
No.
I mean, was that a no? I just want to make sure.
Yes, a no.
Okay, that is a negative. You don't feel like you're breaking the law, but you could be. So, yeah. All right, Lorna, thank you for your call. So Dr. Karen Keough, you're a chief medical officer for the Compassionate Cultivation, one of the companies licensed under the Compassionate Use Act. That's a great testimonial, but it seems like, you know, she is still kind of in a murky area, right?
So technically speaking, the interstate commerce of CBD is changing because of the farm bill on a national level, but it's still relatively risky because transporting CBD between states has the potential to be viewed as an illegal act. The chronic pain indication, the condition of chronic pain, unfortunately was not on the list of expanded conditions for the Texas Compassionate Use Act this legislative session. And we had hoped it would be, but it was not this time around. There is quite a lot of good evidence that shows that CBD can take people much lower doses to much lower doses of opiates for chronic pain and even get people completely off opiates. So this is not an isolated incident that she's describing. We know that CBD can be very helpful that way, and we know that it can be very safe. So we look forward to a time when that will be part of the compassionate use program in Texas. But at the moment, we are still in a position where it's not part of the compassionate use program, and CBD would have to be utilized outside of that system for the purpose of treating chronic pain.
States that have allowed the use of CBD oil to treat chronic pain have seen a reduction in the prescriptions written for opioids. So that's not direct evidence, but it's something to consider.
Yes, that is true, and also reported lower rates of overdose and mortality from overdose. So there's a lot of promising literature there.
All right, another caller, Jax. Hey, Jax, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for letting me call in. My name is Jack Finkel, and I'm the executive director of Texas Normal. And I had a two-part question. Actually, Dr. Keough just thoughtfully kind of answered it, because my understanding was that hemp-based CBD from growers and producers, rather than to the 2014 Farm Bill, are able to participate in the interstate commerce since the 28th Farm Bill passed and took effect in January 1. So therefore, we're able to get internationally produce hemp products under certain protocols. And we don't have hemp-based products yet, so I was actually wondering if the Texas hemp-based products, if Stephanie Click had a clarification on her position that CBD not through teacup is still illegal, because my understanding is that if it's a hemp-based CBD oil from a grandfathered-in producer, that it would be legal. And then I also had a question regarding PTSD. Americans have subsidized medical cannabis research in Israel, and they've pretty much become a cannabis research powerhouse and actually administer cannabis to their military and hospital. So with substantive research both internationally and with the states surrounding us, I'm curious as to why legislators did decide to leave out veterans and Texas patients that do have PTSD.
All right, Jax, thank you for that. Let me go to Ryan Poppy, a reporter for Texas Public Radio, covering this issue pretty closely during the session. Why was this come up? There were bills that were talking about using cannabinoid and medical marijuana to treat PTSD and medical and for issues with their veterans. What happened there?
Well, yeah, recently some of the bills in the House, I think Eddie Lucio's third bill, did contain PTSD as one of the conditions, but when it made it over to the Senate, it didn't really make it to the Senate floor. The Click bill, which was very restrictive at first, got morphed into the Lucio bill, but PTSD was taken out. And I'm not quite sure the reasoning why, other than, the autism lobby this past session was extremely strong. I wouldn't say that it was not as well organized, because the groups that were advocating for PTSD were just as organized. I'm just not sure if, like over in the Senate, if you have enough Senate lawmakers that really understand this issue that well.
And Alex Samuels with the Texas Tribune, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, what's his role in all this?
Yeah, so State Senator Donna Campbell, who carried Click's bill in the Senate, said that Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick did help craft the version of the bill that was debated on the Senate floor, which is kind of a change from what we heard earlier from him. He had previously said that he was completely against any marijuana decriminalization and that he remained wary of any of its medicinal use and really expanding its medicinal purposes. But then that later turned, later in the session, spokespeople for him did say that he was on board with Click's bill.
But not for allowing PTSD, chronic pain, and other issues. Still very narrow focused.
Yeah, still very narrow focused. And I think even Campbell said on the floor that they're still waiting for more research for PTSD and seeing if they can expand the list of conditions maybe in later legislative sessions.
Even after we're hearing and we've seen evidence in other states how this is being used effectively to combat the opioid epidemic, that didn't really find ears with Lieutenant Governor?
Not to my knowledge, no. Again, I think they're really focused on keeping it narrow for the time being and kind of expanding it as their more research comes about.
Dr. Karen Keough, the Chief Medical Officer for Compassionate Cultivation, where are you on allowing this CBD oil, medical marijuana for PTSD and chronic pain?
So both PTSD and chronic pain do have an increasing volume of support in terms of medical evidence. When we look at medical evidence to support changes in treatment, there are grades of quality of evidence, and there are very few studies that meet kind of the top level grade of where we like to see definitive proof, and we're talking about double-blind, placebo-controlled trials. That level of standard has not been met for the majority of CBD and/or broader medical marijuana studies. There are lower, less rigorous studies that have been put forward that are very promising, but until we have really solid double-blind placebo-controlled trials, the medical community remains concerned about the possibility that what we see are placebo effects or other kinds of contributing factors that could suggest a benefit from these treatments that's
okay.
Not quite conclusive.
The number is 210-614-8980. What are your thoughts on CBD oil? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Our phone line is 210-614-8980. We're talking about reforms to medical marijuana and use of CBD oil here in Texas. Some changes were made in the last legislative session. They've expanded very narrowly still the qualifying conditions that people can get a doctor to prescribe a high-quality CBD oil, a medical marijuana oil for them. But we're seeing CBD oil like all over the place in stores and gas stations. It's being applied to creams and all sorts of products, shampoo even, promising that it's going to help you deal with inflammation, pain, anxiety, lots of issues. Number to call in is 210-614-8980. Are you trying this, and have you seen any results? Let's go to the phones with Nick. And hi, Nick. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me. I just wanted to talk about CBD oil. I've been taking it over the past 3 months for anxiety. And I also, similar to Lorena, the previous caller, get it from another state because they are third-party tested. That supplier is called Bluebird Botanicals out of Colorado. I noticed that it helped a lot when I first began taking it, and it started to not help as much. So I wanted to look into the studies, the research that was being done on CBD related to anxiety. And I was very surprised to find that these studies, sometimes there were 700 milligram doses. I even found studies high as 1,200 milligram doses that were given to these participants. To give you an idea of what kind of CBD recommendations are on the bottle, it'll be 10, sometimes 5, sometimes manufacturers will recommend 15, but you typically will never see recommendations over 20 milligrams, even from reputable suppliers. So I find this a little bit concerning that people are going out to stores, CBD stores, or buying CBD oil online, even from suppliers that are third-party tested, and it's not even close to the quantity that they need to be ingesting to help with their issues. And I, you know, found out that if I really wanted to take a 700-milligram dose, which I did try, and it does help dramatically with my anxiety, but if I wanted to do that daily, it would be $80 or $90 a day. So I just wanted to make a note of that so the public is aware. And I also was hoping that your medical correspondent could maybe comment on that, or if she knew anything about why there's such a large discrepancy between the dosage at these stores and the dosage in actual medical literature.
All right. Thank you very much, Nick, for those points. So let's go to Dr. Karen Keough, the Chief Medical Officer for Compassionate Cultivation. We don't even know when you buy products off the shelf how much active CBD oil is in that product, but certainly there's not going to be enough to compare to what you would get if for a pharmaceutical grade CBD oil product, right?
So yes, it can be difficult to know exactly what you're taking, but also it's difficult to know where the recommended dosing has been derived from. Where did the idea that 5 or 10 or 20 milligrams a day would be the correct dose? And if you look at the studies that have been done, the doses in medical studies are considerably higher. This was just the same situation in the world of epilepsy, where there was an FDA-approved drug that came to market with very wide-scale studies. And the doses used in that approval trial ranged from 10 to 20 times higher than what most people were taking online, and in some cases, even logarithmically more than that, even up to as 100 times as much, because some of the online recommendations were to take 1 milligram a day, whereas the recommendation from the trial was between 10 and 20 milligrams per kilogram of body weight per day. So that is an extraordinary difference, and that has a difference both in terms of the cost of the treatment and how well the treatment works, and what the side effect profile looks like. So where the correct dose lies is really still in development, because when a trial is performed on a medical basis, the dose is derived based on whatever information is available. Sometimes there's an undershooting of the dose and the trial is designed too low. Sometimes it's designed even higher than necessary. So we're still learning to understand what is the right dose.
So,
but it is very common that a lot higher doses are recommended in medical therapies.
Yeah, than the stuff that you would buy at the store, even if you bought it from a reputable place with a brand name that you have some respect for, it's not going to be enough. Alex Samuels with the Texas Tribune. I mean, we're talking about a medical situation. We're talking about pharmaceuticals and drugs and treatments. What does the legislature know about any of this stuff? I mean, why are they involved?
That's a question that a lot of advocacy groups are asking, actually, is why the legislature is kind of in charge of this. What's interesting is that Donna Campbell had a bill in the Senate that would have not put a cap on THC at all and really have let that been decided between a physician and a patient, but that bill didn't go anywhere. I don't think it even received a hearing in the Senate. But we do see Representative Quick, who is a registered nurse, and I feel like that's what gives her a lot of gives her a lot of support to really push these bills in the legislature. But, a lot of other lawmakers don't have that same medical background that she does.
But Ryan Poppy, reporter for TPR, so the legislature's involved because of the stigma that these products have?
Yeah, I think that's a part of it. And then there's also the idea that maybe it's a flag planting in terms of, we can maybe make money off this, later down the road, as other legal states have. But Texas has positioned itself in a place where that ship has kind of sailed. It seems now, if you look at even the hemp-derived CBD market, and this is coming from the Agriculture Commissioner, as we spoke of it with him yesterday, that before they even handed out permits, the market is already saturated. He estimates there'll be more CBD in Texas than Texans can actually consume once they roll out the permits for these hemp grows. So I think a lot.
Yeah,
of
but so you're saying that you said that we can make money off this. That means the state is thinking that they could get some sort of tax revenue off this.
Right.
But then there are projections that over the next 5 years, that consumption of CBD oil and other products along those lines are going to go up like 700%.
Right.
Next 5 years, that there's going to be an incredible demand if this trend continues.
Right. Exactly. They really kind of missed the boat. If you look at some of the reporting that we did in terms of the rollout of the teacup program, we're talking about a patient population that's roughly about the size of 135,000 that would have been eligible to be a part of that program. And 702 as of May had signed up for that program. And about 500 of that were all compassionate cultivation.
Yeah, but a lot of the use is going to be demand is coming from just the general consumers. So, Dr. Karen Keough, are you concerned about this fad of CBD oil and some of the dangers of people who are getting off of prescribed medication to experiment with consumer level CBD oil, and if there's something goes wrong, there could be an overall backlash against using this product that we know does a lot of good under the right circumstances?
So I think there is a risk in patients counting on over-the-counter CBD to be a solution for a lot of different kinds of medical problems and not necessarily pursuing kind of tried and true proven medical therapies and doing these kinds of treatments without consulting their physicians, stopping ongoing therapies without consulting their physician. There's a lot of risk there. What I see in my own patients is that when patients are getting good success through the compassionate use program, they don't want to risk going to over-the-counter the products because they know that they have a good quality product and they want to stick with that. And so I think that the more we have a compassionate use program that meets those needs, the less we will have people making risky decisions like that.
And Alex Samuels with Texas Tribune, surrounding states, Texas, not that far away from here, you can go drive across the border and probably get better products. Is that part of the pressure on the state to adopt some of these reforms?
I think that is definitely part of the pressure we have. We talked to a couple Texans who actually moved to Colorado after a 2017 bill to expand the compassionate use program didn't pass. So that's definitely a pressure on lawmakers. I feel like they know that folks can easily go to another state and get products, whether it's recreational marijuana products or oils that are legal for the conditions that they have. So I think lawmakers are aware of sort of the political pressure mounting on them. So it'll be interesting to see if they do expand the list of conditions in the coming years or legislative sessions.
And Ryan Poppy, where do you see this going?
Well, you know, we thought that at the start of the session, decriminalization would be the way that things went, and it didn't. So I think that you'll see that come back in the next session. I don't think that effort's going to go away, especially now that we are, as a state, surrounded like a rainbow by legal recreational and medical states. So you do have a lot of interstate traffic going back and forth, people wanting to go to these legal states and get the things they know either work for them or that they, I guess, enjoy.
And Dr. Karen Keough, does insurance cover this?
Insurance does not cover CBD through the compassionate use program. I have had patients who were able to get some help through their health savings accounts, and I don't know all of the details about how that has worked out, but insurance won't cover the medications because they're not FDA approved. It does become quite a financial burden with long-term use because we're not talking about short-term therapy. It's not like a course of antibiotics for 2 weeks. We're looking at as far into the future as you can see if this is a treatment that is helpful that you want to continue.
And if you want to get a high-quality CBD oil that will have the levels that would help you that we know through science, then that's going to cost you a lot of money as well. I want to thank all of our guests, Alex Samuels from the Texas Tribune, Ryan Poppy, reporter for Texas Public Radio, Dr. Karen Keough, Chief Medical Officer for Compassionate Cultivation. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams. Direction provided by News Director Dan Katz. Technical assistance provided by Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.